Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Nasyuta gava iva yasya vashe bhavanti. Brahmadayasthana brito mitura jamana. Kalashyate prakriti purasyo parasya.
Kalashyate prakriti purasyo parasya.
Sanastanuto charana purusottamasya. Nasyuta gava iva yasya vase bhavante. Brahmadayasthana brito mitura jamana. Kalasyate prakriti purasayo parasya. Samnastanuttu charana purusottamasya. Nasyuta gava iva yasya vase bhavante. Brahmadayasthana brito mitura jamana. Kalashyate prakriti purasayo parasya. Samnastanatu charana purusottamasya. Nasi. Through the nose. Ota. Strong. Gavaha, oxen. Eva, as if. Yasya, of whose. Vase, under the control. Bhavanti, they exist. Brahma adya, Brahma and all others. Tanamrita, the embodied living beings, Mitu, among each other, Ajamana, struggling, Kalasya, of the force of time, Te, of yourself, Prakriti Purushayo, both the material nature and the living entity. Parasya, who is beyond them. Sha, transcendental fortune. Na, for us. Tanutu, may they spread. Charanaha, the lotus feet. Purusha Uttamasya, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation: you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the transcendental entity who is superior to both material nature and the enjoyer of nature. May your lotus feet bestow transcendental pleasure upon us. All of the great demigods, beginning with Brahma, are embodied living entities, struggling painfully with one another under the strict control of your time factor. They are just like bulls dragged by ropes tied through their pierced noses. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami states, Nanu yuda deva sudadharya parasparam jayanti jayanti chakim maham tatreti atahu nasiti mitur mito ridyamana. yudabhi vidyamana brahmadyo piyasyata vahvasi bhavantina tujaya parajaya vasvatantraha. In the perpetual battles between the demigods or devotees of the Lord and the demons or non-devotees, each side sometimes conquers and is sometimes apparently defeated. One may argue that all this has nothing to do with the personality of Godhead, since it is based on nothing more than the interaction of opposing living entities. But every living entity, however, is, however, strictly under the control of the personality of Godhead, and victory and defeat are always in the hands of the Lord. So, this statement of Srila Sridhar Swami is actually repeating a message similar to the Bhagavad Gita, where it is said, Prakrite kriyamanani gunakarmani sarvasa ahankaravimudadma kartaham iti manyante. The bewildered spirit soul thinks himself the doer of activities which are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. But we don't see it. We think that we are doing, but actually, in a subtle way, we are being influenced by the material nature. And thus, our behavior is completely predictable. And when the living being enters into a material body, he is dictated by that body. The living being is thinking, we are making choices. I want to do these things, but that is not a fact. The reality is that we are pushed to do these things. We are forced to do these things because the material body has certain pushings. We notice it that with each age there are different priorities. When you are a child, you want to play, but then at one point you mature, you get interested in the opposite sex and so on, and then comes the point where one wants to settle, and one is thinking of getting established. Then is a point where you think, well, I met one man on the airport while traveling, and he had a t-shirt. And the t-shirt said, I've seen it all, I've heard it all, I've done it all, but I can't remember it all. So, I thought that was quite a good t-shirt. I thought it got the point across of getting older. Yes, he thinks, now I know it all, I've seen it all, but he can't remember it all. So with each age there is a different priority. Each age is somehow or other making us act in a different way. In old age, suddenly one becomes interested in security. What about my security? Who will take care of me in my old age? Like this, one is pushed at different points in life, and there will be different priorities. A little cartoon, a baby. It says, too young. A couple in love with the moon behind them, too much in love. Then a family, so busy, six arms and doing millions of things. Right. Kids, shopping bags, and he has computers, phone, Black and Decker drill for fixing things in the house. Where is the time? Where is time? For nothing. Too busy. Is the caption, too busy. Next picture shows an old man getting a little deaf. It shows old man getting a little deaf, too old. Last picture shows the cross on the grave, too late. Never any time for the Supreme Lord. That's it, no time for Krishna, no time. Each situation, that is an excuse, you see. There's always a reason not to. A good reason. A very reasonable excuse. Absolutely acceptable and reasonable to our own mind. But, no. So one has to overcome all these reasonable excuses and somehow or other utilize his time for the Supreme Lord and somehow or other see that maya jakshena prakrite suyate sacharacharam hetunanena kumtiya jagat vivari vartate. that everything is controlled by the Supreme Lord. He is the Hetu. He is the cause of everything. That we have to see. And therefore, there is a plan of the Lord. Some years ago, there was an edition of Back to Godhead magazine. And in there, as usual, they had a lecture of Srila Prabhupada transcribed. And the lecture of Srila Prabhupada basically was saying that we should not make plans. We should just rely on Krishna. And then in the same Back to Godhead, in the back, there was an editorial by Satsarup Maharaj which said we should make plans for Krishna. So I thought this was very interesting because it was an example of broken parampara. Guru says one thing and the disciple said the opposite. Guru said we should not make plans, and what is his disciple saying? We should make plans for Krishna. So what is this? Yes, there is the plan of Krishna, undoubtedly. And that plan of Krishna is behind everything in this world. And nothing happens by chance, or nothing happens without a purpose. And Krishna is trying to tell us something. And Krishna is trying to make arrangements to uplift us. And then we are, in this way, being purified. But we cannot see. We cannot see it. There is a story about a king. This is some king a few hundred years ago or whenever in India somewhere. So kings used to keep in the court, they used to keep a pundit, the court pundit, and this pundit would sort of be very learned, and it was a sort of entertainment, right? If you had a question and difficult questions, the pundit was supposed to enter and answer. For that he was the court pundit. So this time the king had a question for the court pundit, and he asked the pundit, he said, Panditji, please answer this question for me. It's been puzzling my mind now. He said, please tell me, what is the daily work of God? So, it's like, well, he is doing the creation. No, the king said. No, that's not his daily work. That he's doing one time. Creation he does one time, then it's done. No, I want to know, what is his daily work? Well, the pundit says, it's a very unusual question. Very unusual question. I have to consult the scriptures. Yeah, I cannot just answer it like that. For that, I have to consult the scriptures. So you please give me some time. I will answer it in 1 week. Well, so the king let him know that he'd better come up with the answer in 1 week, or, you know. And so the pundit was getting a little worried. And he was looking everywhere, and he just couldn't find the answer. What is the daily work of God? What is it? So, and that, like, there was no verse, nothing that he could find. So then, because the king's mood had not been so favorable, the pundit thought that it might be a good idea to go visit some relative far away who was not well in another country. So he went to this remote relative, and on the way, as he was leaving the town, he met one of his disciples. This disciple was actually a simple fellow. He was he was simply a cowherd man. He was taking care of cows and roaming around with the cows, and cowherd man saw his guru, said, "Oh, Guru Maharaj, where are you going? Are you leaving?" He said, "Yes, I am. I'm leaving. You know, there is too much trouble. This king is asking these impossible questions, and he's also getting a little unpleasant. So I better go and visit some relatives who are not well." So. He said, "Well, what was the king's question then?" The disciple asked. He said, "Oh, the question is, what is the daily work of God?" "Oh, that's a very simple question," the cowherd man said. "Oh," the guru said, "you know the answer then? Then you tell me." He said, "No, it's a little complex to explain. Maybe I better explain it directly to the king." All right, the pundit said. So they went to the court, to the king. And the pundit came in and said, actually, your majesty, your question is very simple, and therefore I've decided that my disciple will answer the question. So this disciple, dressed in simple cloth, he said, who is this? You know, he's going to answer the question. So, yes, he will answer the question. So then the king said, all right, so what is the answer? Then the coward man said, your majesty, is it true that you are asking and that I am giving the answer? Is it then a fact that I am acting in the role of the teacher and that you are acting in the role of the student? The king said, yes. He said, then according to scripture, isn't it a fact that the teacher should sit higher than the student? The king is sitting on his throne and looking down. He says, you want to sit on the throne? Anyway, it was custom, it was Vedic culture. So he comes down on the throne, and this man in his simple cloth and everything sitting on the throne. So the king says, so now you better answer the question. And he was sort of looking at the royal guard, you know, and if he doesn't, you know, then you know what to do, huh? So you better answer this question now. So then the coward man said, your majesty, the question is already answered. Well, the king, his blood pressure almost exploded, you know. Then, is that, but the coward man said, but still, I will explain it. He says, the daily work of God is to pull down those who are proud and to elevate those who are humble. It's nice, isn't it? That story. It's a nice story, really. A little long, but the punchline is good. That is definitely good, because we didn't think of this. But this is really what is happening to us also. To pull down those who are proud and to elevate those who are humble. And thus, the battle between the demons and the demigods is going on within the universe to pull down those who are proud and to elevate those who are humble. This is what is happening, actually. It is happening to us. Are we experiencing it? Yes, we are. And what is Krishna doing to us today? Is he pulling us down or is he lifting us up? According to our inclinations. I'll just repeat it for the latecomers. There was a king who was asking a question to his court pundit, and the question was, what is the daily work of God? And after a long story, finally the answer came, and the answer was, the daily work of God is to pull down those who are proud and to elevate those who are humble. So this is going on with us, and this is going on, and we are here discussing the position of the demons and the demigods. And we see this battle between demons and demigods is going on because the demigods are also inclined towards pride. But they are pious. They are pious, but still there is pride within them. And thus, they still need rectification from time to time. It is like that. This is the nature of the material world. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which Srila Prabhupada summarized as Nectar of Devotion of Srila Rupa Goswami, the entire process of devotional service is described. And then he divides it up in three categories. He says there is sadhana bhakti, devotional service in practice. There is bhava bhakti, devotional service in ecstasy, and then there is prema bhakti, devotional service in love of God. Then Srila Rupa Goswami says there's actually not much difference between bhava and prema. It's the same thing. It's the same. Only prema is stronger. It said bhava is like the first ray of sunshine in the morning, and Prem is the hot sun at 12 o'clock on your head. Yeah, that is the only thing. So it is more intensified, but it is of the same nature. He said, but there is an essential difference between Bhav and Prem, and that is this. He said, in Bhav, one still experiences a sense of suffering in this world, still a sense of an obstacle. Still, but in praying, there is no more sense of any obstacle, nothing. Everything is experienced as completely perfect. So that's quite amazing, because I woke up this morning and from all that kirtan yesterday and my leg was paining and I was thinking, well, I'm not going to the Guru Puja this morning, I'll take it easy. Like that, maybe it was... It was nice yesterday, but it was a busy day also. Go a little, start a little slow today. So, because I felt some suffering. And everybody feels from time to time. Oh, it's so hot. God, it's unbearable. Ugh, Melbourne, it's too cold. Something. Always something. Adhyatmika klesh, adhibhautika klesh, abhidaivika klesh. Three types of suffering. Suffering from mind and body, suffering from other living beings, suffering from the devatas, from the natural circumstances. It is also said that material existence, there are the sat urmi, sometimes said the six waves, or sometimes called the six whips, and we are beaten by these six whips: hunger, thirst, lamentation, old age, infirmity, and death. These, every living being, we are being whipped all the time. If you were not hungry, why would you work? Really think about it. Just because we're hungry, we get so much entangled. You know, need to eat. Everyone needs to eat. The kids have to eat. Everyone hungry, hungry, hungry. Money, money, money. So in this way, we get so entangled in this material world. We get pushed along. So how can you say there is no suffering? If we speak of these six whips, how can you say there is no suffering? Isn't there suffering? Aren't we experiencing it? Bushfires. Isn't there suffering? No. There's the Prema Bhakta. No, there is no suffering at all. Everything is wonderful. What a vision. What an amazing vision. How can they see like that? So everything is the perfect arrangement of the Supreme Lord. Everything is His mercy. A Prema Bhakta only sees mercy everywhere. So he is really beyond these things. That's another level. Anyway, it's not something too easy to realize, but I think it's at least something for meditation. And maybe we are not able to rise above the level of suffering, but by meditating upon it, that there is a state of consciousness above, maybe we'll take it a little less serious, and maybe we'll lament a little less. Because that's what Bhagavad Gita tells us. Nakangsati nasosati. Don't hanker and don't lament. And the tendency for lamentation is very strong. Oh, poor me. You know that song? Oh, poor me. All these things are happening. Why just me? It's not fair. Why these things are happening to me? I'm always the one who has the bad luck, and so on and so on. No, we have to develop faith that Krishna is all good. The Supreme Lord is all good, and therefore His purpose is all good. And thus, the so-called good and bad of this world is not at all good and bad, because it is the arrangement of the all-good Supreme Lord, who is therefore having nothing but the best intention. And thus the devotee just accepts. He just accepts. All right. Yes, whatever you said, it's all good. You are all good. But if we don't have that faith that the Supreme Lord is all good, then we think, well, but this is pretty bad. This is very bad. Maybe this is so bad. This is so bad. Maybe there is no God. So actually it is our lack of faith that we cannot see that the Supreme Lord is all good. That is really what's happening. Because if we thoroughly understand that He is unlimitedly intelligent, He is unlimitedly kind, and He is all good, then we can accept anything as the perfect arrangement of the Lord. And we just say, well, it doesn't look good now, but, you know, ultimately, end good, all good. It may have a good purpose in the end. Yes. So many things happened. For example, at the end of the Mahabharata, we know that all Arjuna has basically defeated all the opponents. And then at one point Krishna says, now, Arjuna, please come down from the chariot. Take your bow, Gandiva, and come down from the chariot. So Arjuna takes his bow, steps down from the chariot, and next moment, his car bursts out into flames. Imagine, you would be standing there, my car, it's just burning like anything. Your latest, you know, the one that you've invested in, and Arjuna had a good one, right? From Indra, you know? And there, right in front of his eyes, his car is burning. I mean, God, you know, what is worse than that? And it's about one of the worst things that can happen. And that happened to Arjuna, so he's standing there, but how is this possible? This chariot has been given to me by Agni. This chariot, it went through the entire battle of Kurukshetra, and it many, many astras were fired at this chariot and couldn't touch it. How is it that now it is burning? And Krishna said, my dear Arjuna, you know, actually, your chariot should have burned long ago. Long ago, with all those weapons that were fired at it. But all this time, I was blocking these weapons from acting. I was making an invisible shield that protected your chariot all this time. And that's why it never burned. Said, but now that the war is over, now I'm simply withdrawing that protection, that shield. And that is why your chariot is now burning. So, all this time, Arjuna had no idea what Krishna was doing. So this story is very interesting because it shows how there's the invisible intervention of the Lord in the life of his devotee. And the devotee doesn't see it. He cannot see it. And the devotee is thinking, it's my chariot that is so powerful and therefore nothing is happening. And he doesn't know that Krishna is doing it. And in the same way, we are walking around and thinking, yes, I'm getting quite advanced in my spiritual life now. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. And Maya, what can Maya do to me? All right, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Yes. And meanwhile, Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, is all the time interfering, blocking Maya here, blocking Maya there, invisibly, protecting us in that way. Otherwise, you know, we would fall down 100 times and we're walking around sort of like, well, I'm becoming quite something. Yeah. Of course, Krishna smiles upon us and knows that yes, yes, they still have a long way to go. One time I had a dream about Prabhupada, and it was a little bit of a funny dream, but you can't blame me because it was a dream. So, you know, it's a suitable story to tell in Australia, and you'll soon get the idea. You see, Prabhupada was walking, and he was very, very big, very big. His head was touching the clouds, that's how big he was. And of course his normal aristocratic pose like that, and he had in the front of his cloth, in his kurta, there was a big pocket on the front, and in that pocket there were the leaders of ISKCON. They were small and they were looking over the edge, you know, they were all like looking over the edge of the pocket, sort of checking things out, and they were arguing, and they were saying, we should go this way, no, that way, this is the way, no, you're wrong, this is the way. And they were arguing like that. And meanwhile, Prabhupada kept on walking, and sometimes he was looking down and sort of smiling upon them and seeing the fighting and this, that, and that. He continued to walk in an undisturbed way. And then I woke up. But I saw Tamal Krishna Maharaj in there, and Arikesh, and some of those leaders. So it was, it put everything in perspective. It was a nice dream. It just showed how dependent we are, really. Further, I have no purport to this dream. I leave it up to you to figure it out, so to say. But anyway, we are here going through so many arrangements of Krishna, the all good Supreme Personality of Godhead, and whatever He sends us, it is good, it is mercy, it is His mercy. And simply what He is doing, He is elevating those who are humble, and He is pulling down those who are proud. And we are realizing what we are going through. How many times are we pulled down? How many times? Like today, as I said, my leg was a little paining this morning, and I guess yesterday I was the flying Swami, and today I'm sort of hobbling along, you know, Swami hobble along, and Krishna has just said, okay, now don't get carried away, don't think you are like flying in from the spiritual world, stay on the ground, and here I am today, all right. Yes, Krishna. It's good. I can see that it is good that Krishna is just in case you might get carried away. Okay. A little reminder. So like this, Krishna is dealing with us, giving us so many reminders. Yes. And of course, if you don't listen to Krishna, then you get a shock treatment, like the bushfire. That's a shock treatment for hard nuts, you know, if you're really a hard nut, all right, then we have for you some special treatment. But Krishna is all good, and that is very nice to meditate upon. It takes time to thoroughly realize that, but this meditation that Krishna is all good is very important, because otherwise, how will we ever develop love of God? It's not so easy. And especially, you know, yeah, a little bushfire, a little tsunami, a little earthquake, a little this, a little that, a little bankruptcy, and you start to think, well, I don't know if God, or if your hard disk crashes, I don't know if God is all good. There you go, you know. It's like, what's worse than a heart disk that crashes these days? Like, one of the worst things that can happen in your life. And that is the nature of the Supreme Lord. Wow. If God is like that, then He must be cruel. Yes, He must be cruel. How can God be cruel? So then there's two options. Either there is a cruel God, or there is no God. And we see that atheists, like Nietzsche, for example, spends plenty of time to sort of show that God was cruel. And then the next step, there is no God, is not so difficult anymore. If we see that God is the cause of so much suffering, that's how you become a pucker atheist. Yes, that's how you do it. Just meditate. Oh, God is responsible. Thus, we must take responsibility. We ourselves must take responsibility for all the suffering in this world. We are responsible. So, wow, you know, I mean, but that's a bit much, you know, to say that we are responsible. No, we are responsible. We are responsible for the bushfire. It's our fault. Whew. My fault. Well, I mean, that's a bit much. No, It is our collective sinfulness that such things can happen on this planet. It is because of all the sinful things that we have done in this world that this karmic release could take place. Even if we were not directly the cause of this forest fire, indirectly we are. Because if we would have been sufficiently pious, then our piety would have stopped this disaster. If we would have been so pious, then just on the strength of our austerity, it would not have happened. Remember that story of Savitri and Satyavan, and that Satyavan was Savitri wanted to get married, but this Satyavan seemed to be a candidate, but when they did the astrological chart, it didn't look good because it said that Satyavan would die an early death. So they said, no, don't marry this man. Don't do it. This is not a good idea. Anyway, but she was quite determined, and the marriage happened. And then, he died quite early. I mean, they were just married, and then he died. So Savitri began to follow Yamaraj. Yamaraj was taking away the husband, and she was following, so this woman keeps on following. So at one point Yamaraj is saying, what's happening here? Why are you following? He said, no, you're taking my husband. And he said, well, you know, that was destined. You have to accept this now. This is the arrangement of karma, and you just go back now. Go back and accept. This is inevitable. You have to accept. She said, no, I cannot accept because I don't have a son. He didn't give me a son. I said, well, you know, that is of course unfortunate. She said, no, you please give me the benediction that I will have a son. He said, all right, I will give you the benediction that you'll have a son. And then she kept still following. He said, now I gave you the benediction, and still you are following. What is this? She said, well, how can I have a son without my husband? So, then Yamaraj said, all right then, I will return him. So in this way, she got him back, right? On the strength of her chastity, and she could do so. There was so much piety there that she could change destiny, but we don't have such piety, and therefore there are bushfires because we are also sinful, and it is our, we don't change the collective karma. We don't contribute to that. We are sinful, and the result is that the world suffers, and our piety doesn't change it. Just realize that, and in that sense we share. We share in the responsibility for this, you see. Yes. It is also due to our sinful activities that this is happening. Just read the Vedic scriptures, read the Ramayana, and read that in ancient times, a son would not die before his father. In ancient times, there was no disease in the kingdom. Now, you know, do you have your Medicare? If you don't have Medicare, then it's very troublesome because everybody needs Medicare, right? Because we are all sinful. So let us understand this. So first of all, let us take responsibility. Let us take responsibility for the reactions that we are getting. We have caused them. We are responsible. It's us. Let's not blame Krishna. How can he do this? How can he send such disasters, and innocent children have died? But in Kali Yuga there are no innocent children, don't you know? In Kali Yuga especially, the sinful nature is already there, and it's just a matter of time before it comes out. Just wait a while. That innocent little child is not as innocent as it looks. Kuchi kuchi ku. Yes. Yes. No. The sinfulness is there. It is that living being has carried with him so much sin that is deposited within the heart in the form of seeds. It is remaining there. And thus, that sinful inclination will come out again, without a doubt. And that's us. And haven't we noticed it in ourselves, that the sinful inclination is strong? Haven't we noticed? Doesn't everyone have a few skeletons in the closet? Right? Yes. So, that is this age. The hidden dark desires. Even within the so-called pious. Because nobody is pious. So just realizing that, we gradually, I hope that by painting this gloomy picture, that we are thoroughly accepting responsibility for whatever is there, and that we don't blame Krishna. That is my point. That is the underlying point. And that we accept him thoroughly as all good. Because then we can love him. First you have to appreciate that Krishna is all good, and that he is unlimitedly kind and unlimitedly merciful. Then you can love him. Otherwise, how can you love him? As long as you hold Krishna responsible, even a tiny little bit, for any suffering in this world, how can you develop love? Not possible. Then there will be some bitterness in the heart. Then there will be some enmity in the heart. And we'll just hold him responsible. Think like, how can he do this actually? How could Krishna do this? The fact that Krishna did this, that my parents died in such a terrible way, that Krishna allowed this. No, I cannot accept. No. Then there will be no love, because there will be some bitterness towards Krishna. So we must accept Krishna is all good. This is actually the beginning, the seed of developing love of God. So this is going on, but even the demigods forget. Children forget. Yes. The purport continues, and I didn't finish it. Now, I have two options. One is I finish it today, and the other one is I finish it tomorrow. Yeah. You say today, I say tomorrow. Because otherwise you can information overload. Too many points means no point. Too many points is like, instead of the lecture, should clarify the point. It should not make so many points that all the points become covered under a mountain of points, and in the end you think like, wow, what was that all about? Thus, it's better I stop here and ask for questions. Now, if you have many questions, then we can carry on a little longer. Otherwise, we have an early finish today. That's also good. Yes?
Maharaj, again, this question is about bushfire.
Bushfire. He likes bushfire. Okay, what about bushfire today?
Maharaj, as you mentioned, we are indirectly or directly responsible. And maybe our piety is not enough to...
Definitely.
what puzzles me is the indiscriminate nature of the thing. If you go with the Bijam Kutam concept, so how come all of these Dhyana Prarabdha at one particular place manifest? Are they all prearranged?
Yes, all prearranged. Krishna arranged. Krishna knew it long ago. And the Devatas knew it also. Yamaraj knew it well. He knew it was coming. He arranged it all. He set it all up that these people would assemble there in a nice place and just build their nice little houses all there in the same area. Yes. All that calm. Yes, of course. You have to see. I said it. Supremely intelligent. Omniscient. And thus, the Lord can oversee everything. And everything arranged. Of course. Of course. What else is it? And it's his mercy. Of course. But these things will happen in the age of Kali. Again and again. Again and again. It's already built in. Natural disasters. It will happen. Tornado in America. You know, in 1953, in my country, which is not having problems with fires but with waters, because a good portion of the country is below the sea level, and there are walls on the outside holding out the sea, and in a storm you can hear the sea hammering those dikes. If you live close to the dike, you can hear the waves beating on the dikes. Powerful beating. So that's when people in their houses are a little worried. And in 1953, it happened. A large portion of the country flooded, and 2 million people were flooded out of their houses, and something like 300,000 drowned. Yes. What's your bushfire? Peanuts. Peanuts. Yeah. So, it's all relative, bushfires or this or that. Just understand that in Kali Yuga such things are part of the reality. But that in previous yugas, at the time of Lord Ramachandra, there was no disease in the kingdom, what to speak of natural disasters. And we remember that before the birth of Lord Ram, there was a drought. Immediately it was considered it must be due to some irregularity in the activities of the king. The Brahmanas identified it, and they immediately organized that a yajna was being performed to counteract it. And it was. And then everything was solved like that. Yeah. Nowadays, you know, droughts everywhere. The deserts are growing. The Sahara Desert has grown and is coming like up from Africa into Spain. And Spain is slowly drying up and becoming a desert. Big bushfires also. Yeah, like that. Rajasthan, a few hundred years ago, all the Marwaris were living happily in Rajasthan and they had forests there. Nowadays the Marwaris are all over India. Why? Because Marwar is now a desert. All the Agarwals and so on, they don't live anymore in their original place, because now that has turned into a desert. But before it was very fertile land. Anna Drishti, Bhagavatam 12th canto says it. There will be droughts, floods, famine, earthquake, all as reactions to the collective sinful karma of the people on the planet. We are responsible. We have to accept responsibility. It's heavy. But it makes us humble also. And then we see Krishna as all good. Yeah. Anyone else? Please. Yeah. Yeah, of course, because we're getting more good things than we deserve. It's not that all the good things that we get are just the result of our karma. No, Krishna is sending so many things out of his causeless mercy. So, thus, in that way, there's a lot of mercy of Krishna, not only for us, but for all the living beings. Krishna always makes arrangements. See, the Brahman explains, he says, Krishna is more eager for the living being to go back to Godhead than we are ourselves. And thus Krishna always makes arrangements. Always. And then we find a deity somewhere. Like in Germany, they found a deity of Lord Nrsimhadev. Okay? There's some old carving in stone of half man, half lion. So all the devotees are going, oh, Nrsimhadev, Nrsimhadev. Of course, you know, maybe. But it is a half man, half lion, just found, just see. So, and we have so many things in so many places of the world that remind us of Vedic culture. Remember in the Jumna Maharaj some years ago went to Russia, and there was a situation at that time that the government was creating some difficulties. So, there was a big professor, and he was very respected by the government. So they wanted in the Dumna Maharaj to meet the professor to make a favorable impression. So Maharaj was trying to remind the man that that the ISKCON is actually part of Indian tradition. So he was trying to, and that's part of the Vedic culture. So then the professor was going, yeah. We know all that. He said, that's not the question. He said, the question is whether the Veda started from India or whether it started from Russia. From Russia? Yes, from the Volga region. He said, there is a book, a scripture, that is as old as Russia. And in that scripture, it is a book that describes the adventures of a hero named Kishan. And in his early childhood, he is fighting with a huge snake. And he defeats this snake. That's called like Kishan, huh? Okay. Yeah. Kishan is plagiarism, right? We've got copyrights, wait a minute. what's going on here? This is clearly a case where you can see a book as old as Russia. And I met more Russians, of course, everybody met Russians, they're all over the place. And some Russian devotees told me that their mother used to tell them ancient stories about princes who used to whisper to their arrows, and those arrows would never miss the target. Well, I mean, we can figure that out, isn't it? What would that mean, you know, whispering to the arrows? Right? Yes, what was Arjuna doing? Chanting mantras, and his arrows would never miss the target. Then, a few years ago, I was, thanks to Sri Computer, I have there a collection which is called Sacred Texts. And I have all the sacred texts of the world, all the main texts I have, you know. I'm just carrying them around in this one little machine. And so, of course, I've never had time to read them, but it is sort of, it makes you feel good that you have them, you know. And so, just like the 80 gigabytes of lectures that I have, that would take me 3 lifetimes to listen to, but if I would listen 24 hours a day, but it feels good to have, you know. So I'm happy. So I was looking at these sacred texts, and then I came across ancient Persia, right, now known as Iran. And they have scriptures, Zoroastrian scriptures, and I was reading that. And then it said that there is a tree, and it has 4 roots. A golden one, a silver one, a copper one, and an iron one. And these 4 roots are representing 4 ages. I go, 4 ages? A golden one, silver one, copper one, iron one? Rings a bell somewhere. Yeah? I kept on reading. And then it said that in the previous ages, the golden age, he said, there was a tradition of a class of men who were wearing a thread around their waist. And these men were performing a ceremony named Yasna. A thread around the waist and performing Yasna? Wait a minute, guys, what's going on here, right? And then it says, and then in the Iron Age, a foreign invader will come into the land of Persia and will oppress the ancient culture. And those men that perform Yasna will hide in the mountains, and they will secretly continue to perform their activities there, it said, until the end of days. And at the end of days, a prince will come from India on a white horse. Prince from India on a white horse. and he will drive out all these demons. Wow, who would that prince be? Now let me think about this. It's a puzzle for the Sunday morning. All right, yeah. So I'll leave you with this little puzzle to take home, and you can just puzzle and see if you can figure out who is the prince on the white horse coming at the end of the Iron Age. Who could that be? You know it? Kalki. It's amazing, no? But, I mean, when you read that in some book that has nothing to do with Vedic tradition and so on, and you read it like, but that's... It's so crystal clear what is written there. So this reconfirms to us that actually once this Vedic culture was all over the world, and thus, that Krishna's mercy is manifest everywhere, in every nook of the and corner of the planet. We had our scientist Sadaputta, a brilliant person who unfortunately recently left this world. And Sadaputta once made a film, and it was a very interesting film. It showed Stonehenge. And it showed the formation of the rocks in a certain position in Stonehenge. And then he took us to South America. And he took us to the pyramids in South America, and he showed that there were also, on these pyramids, formations of stone columns, which were in the same positions as Stonehenge. And he showed, they measured the distances, and it showed like that, basically the same mathematical correlation between the distances. He said, is this quite amazing? And then he took us to India, and next moment we were in Yantar Mantar. Yes, Yantar Mantar, if you know it, there is these two famous Yantar Mantars in India, one in Delhi and one in Jaipur, and these are Vedic astronomical observatories, and they're all, and there in Yantar Mantar, there also you find some small columns that were at the same distances. But in Yantar Mantar they knew what they were for. They were for measuring the position of the planets. The position of the sun, because with time there is a slight change, you see. So yes. So this was very interesting. Very interesting. Then once they of course there was some difference between the Yantar Mantar in India and Stonehenge. But in the positioning of the stones. But not in the distances, in the mathematical distances between them. So then they did a calculation, and they calculated if this position of stones would have been a observatory, then nowadays it wouldn't be correct. The sun is somewhere else. But if we calculate back when this would have been correct, then they calculated that this observatory was 17,000 years old. Interesting, isn't it? Very interesting, I think. Think little things like that show us, right, how once this culture was spread all over the world, without a doubt, and how Krishna's mercy is always manifesting somewhere in this world. Is there any doubt about it? Not to us. A hardcore skeptic may say, well, you know, what's your proof, you know. And we say, you know, we'll just say to him, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, right? You try the experiment, Dr. Frog. Come in your white coat and paint it pink, right? And join this ashram and see what happens. Anyone else? Yes.
Going to the bushfires and the challenges.
that pushed fire is a boomerang today. I try to relativize that flame in bushfire with a flood in Holland, you know, like with 300,000 people dead, just to put it in perspective, and still it's like this tiny little flame here in the back, in the outback. It keeps on coming back, you know. It's not a bushfire, it's a boomerang. Go ahead. The plague. In the Middle Ages, the plague killed 1/3 of the world's population. The Black Plague. I got it. Well, do the people have to experience these things first before they turn to Krishna? Let's have a vote, a straw vote. Those who vote yes, raise your hands. Okay, yeah, they're a bit slow, you know. Okay. Okay, voters, wake up now. You're voting, right? Okay. Is it that people have to first go through different disasters and so on before they wake up and take to Krishna consciousness? Or is it that you sort of automatically come to Krishna? Those who think that that people have to go through a little hardship before they wake up, please vote yes. God, it's a forest. I hope we're not going to have a fire. you see, yes. And someone's raising his hand. Does that mean you have a question over there? Any other question? No. Okay, then it's time to take a little break, and that's what we'll do. Those who are into it can come to Deer Park today, and they will have more programs, and then again here at 5 this afternoon. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.